G'day everyone, welcome back to the show here. Today is episode 155, Transforming Pain into Immense Creativity with breathwork healer David Elliott. David Elliott is Siobhan's teacher, and he's many people's teachers actually. He's been doing this for decades, and this is the second time chatting to David. I wanted to get him back on the show because I really enjoyed our first conversation, and I knew there'd be, like with a lot of the guests that come on the show, just more hours to chat about interesting and, you know, wonderful conversations. And, you know, we caught up, I think, at the very beginning of Melbourne's first lockdown, when the pandemic was kicking off, and I knew lots of things would have changed. And, you know, David had spoke about a lot of things that had changed in his life. But breathwork is such an interesting modality to me. I'm fascinated by it. At the moment, I'm back at uni at the moment because I'd love to work in psychedelic assisted therapy. So I'm doing a psychological science degree. And what I'm really noticing, because I'll often hang out at Siobhan's meditation classes and things, and people that do breath work have very similar experiences than what the research suggests with psychedelic therapy. More and more stuff is coming out these days about the somatic, adaptation of trauma, and how the body really holds on to a lot of pain and memories that are stuck in the past. And there's a very strong evolutionary theory behind that, being that the body needs to remember what it did in that, you know, so that it can keep us safe if something like that were to happen again. So the body tends to react subconsciously, you know, or unconsciously really, because we're not conscious of our reactions to stimuli all the time. And it's a wonderful adaptation, because if there's threat, the body can react faster than our logical brain can really, you know, oh, should I run away from this cyber too? Oh, I'm fucking dead. So there's a lot of this kind of trauma stuff coming out, and breath work is a wonderful way that you get into the body. And that might sound a little esoteric, but what really is going on there, and I'm seeing this happening, you know, when people are doing this kind of breath work that David Elliott really, really did a wonderful job in bringing, I know he was taught as well, but it exploded with his work, and his stuff is amazing. You can find out more about David at davidelliott.com. That's two L's and two T's, www.davidelliott.com. But yeah, just what it does, it's amazing. You see these kind of intense breathwork patterns happening. A lot of it's down to the set and setting as well, the intention behind it. If you're led by a meditation teacher, a healer like David, or, you know, or Siobhan, or, you know, but this is obviously all about David at the moment. So, but it's amazing what's going on, and people are crying, and people are laughing, and people are angry, and people are afraid as they're working and processing through, and thereby updating these old memories, which is essentially what trauma therapy is. You know, I try to explain this to a lot of my clients in the clinic. The goal with trauma therapy is to basically render those moments into boring stories. If they become boring stories, then there's really nothing for you to heal. And, you know, there's a process that I use in that. A lot of it's kind of visualization of a new life, a new way of living, a perfect day. You know, I really believe that you find yourself by looking forwards into the future. And there's so much pain that comes from past memories that keep us ingrained in these limiting belief systems. So when you really start to conceive a new idea, it starts to pull you forward, and at the very least gives you a sense of meaning to go back into these traumatic memories to heal them, because you want to live in this new exciting life so much. But yeah, David and I got into a really wonderful conversation today. A lot of it was about creativity, and a lot of this stuff isn't just about trauma, but it's also about new perspectives. So obviously there's a therapeutic element to that, but also about, you know, oh, I've got writer's block at the moment. That's what I needed to really polish off that character. Or I can't seem to get this new business thing going, but oh, there you go. And so much of this stuff is really analogous to analyzing dreams for creative insights and things. But yeah, we had an amazing conversation, so I really hope you enjoy this. Guys, quick word from our sponsors, as always, the Find Your Mission course. This is the course sponsoring the podcast, But really, it's a great way just for me to kind of bump the podcast out there and the course as well. The course, the Find Your Mission course, it's something that I'm very, very proud of. And I think it's a really, really great way to conceptualize life for you. If you're someone who's lost, you don't know who you are. These are common pain points that I hear in the clinics and that I work in as a counselor. You know, the pain that comes from wanting to find a sense of purpose in life is, I've had a major change and I don't know how to integrate that. I don't really know who I am anymore. I feel like I've lost myself in this relationship, or maybe I've lost myself in life because I thought that this is how I should be living, but it's not really how I'm living. And I know there's something more out there, but I don't really know how to take those first steps, let alone what those first steps really are. This is the course for you. So it's a journaling course. There's some content as well. You get to watch the videos when you sign up for it and become a member. And it's a great way, at least in my personal opinion, based upon the research I've done and the experiences that I've had in my life that led me to becoming a counselor, to help you integrate and update painful memories, to let go of those limiting belief systems, as well as conceptualizing a more exciting vision for your life, to get you back on a path that you construct that's ultimately meaningful. So you can find out more about that. If you go to my website, guys, just go tomahearn.org. That's actually a link there. So it's /find your mission. Now you can use the code word podcast for 10% off. So it's about $25 off for the course there. And you get a free half an hour one-on-one coaching call with me just for accountability purposes. I think I find that it really helps. You know, you do a course, but sometimes life gets in the way and you forget to do the dishes, or you forget to put your pants away or do the bed or whatever it is. But if you have that half an hour little accountability call, you know that's coming. It's like, oh shit, I've got to do that second module, whatever. The course, you could, if you wanted to, you could punch the whole course out in half a day. I've had clients before who've written 5,000 words per journal. I certainly don't recommend you just do, you know, a couple of dot points in there, because it actually takes time for you to get into deeper memories through a process of hand thinking, which is also known as writing. But if this course interests you guys, as I said, head to www.tomahearn.org/find your mission. Use the code podcast for 10% off. And if you want to book in a time with me to chat, because you might want to do some counseling work, I try to leave some days open for my online clients as well, so I can hit a wider market, not just for the people that I see in the clinic. You can head to the link in my bio on my Instagram, or again, just send me an email at tomahearn.org, and we can hook up and chat and figure out what your goals are, what your pain points are, what your struggles are, and go from there. But please now sit back, enjoy the incredible David Elliott. Bye, guys. We attach ourselves to people that make us feel warm and welcomed. It helps build community and it helps our survival.
If you have untreated trauma, it affects you on a DNA level, can pass that on to your kids. So it's well worth getting your trauma sorted out.
And I do my best to see that silver lining within every experience.
The solution should be simple, but it's not, because we're talking about culture change, talking about changing behaviors, we're talking about challenging identities.
David, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here.
for everyone who is just paying attention now because I pressed record, that came as a quick surprise. We were chatting for about 10 minutes before the show. That's awesome.
Might as well not waste any time.
Yeah. Well, hey, so I moved house a couple of times, I think, since our last episode, but it's great to see you've still got the same setting, because we started off our first podcast talking about that wonderful didgeridoo.
Well, it's funny, our 10-minute pre-conversation, one of the friends who's only, has never been to my house, who's just seen me online as far as this place, he and his wife walked in and they like looked at the room and they go, oh, where do you sit now? And I was like, and they go, oh, and they're like, suddenly it all lined up, because they're like, oh yeah. I mean, they only had experienced this room from Zoom. So,
oh yes, that's very true. Well, that's a great segue, as you said, back into our previous conversation. One of the things I was thinking about asking you on the show is, you know, we hung out before the world was hit with the Black Plague, you know. So it's
was it that long ago?
Yeah, it's crazy to think that was probably would have been mid 2019, perhaps, I could be wrong. It might have been just as we were getting hit with the first wave of it. But God, so much has changed, isn't it? It almost feels like it was a time before and a time after.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I constantly reflect, and I mean, I was already doing a lot. I'm probably 50-60% virtual private sessions, not teaching my classes online, but doing the private work forever. Phone sessions 25 years ago, making their way to, you know, what, Skype and then Zoom, but teaching, you know, that really, I finally relented when COVID hit and said, okay, you know, I'll give it a try. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know, and a lot of people think, oh, you can have unlimited people. And I'm like, no, actually on Zoom, typically now my classes are, I make them 25% smaller, you know, there's enough space and for the really shy, quiet people who aren't going to say hardly a word, you know, to have the time to draw them out a little bit, as opposed to if we're all sitting in a room or a space, I, you know, will make it a point to work or have some interactions with every person. But if you suddenly have, you know, instead of 40 people in a room, you have 80 people online, it's easy to, the people on the, you know, backside of it that are really quiet, you know, you may not interact with them enough to really cause them to stay present, you know, and absorb. So,
I mean, that's such a good point. It's exactly, as you said before, you know, there are pros and cons, you know, and sometimes we have to adapt, and, you know, Zoom's good because, as you said, you can reach a lot of people, but then there are some people that kind of get lost, and it's no one's fault. It's just, you know, if people aren't naturally more extroverted, they're going to be kind of left behind when you can only do so much in front of a screen. So,
yeah, I mean, and also what I tell people, I'm like, because they're like, you know, in people's minds, it's like, oh, you could have hundreds of people. I'm like, not the way I teach. And it's just as much, if not more work, really energetically, you know, keeping everything grounded, really staying present with what you're doing, you know, because I always say as a teacher, if you zone out for 1 minute, or whatever, and then if it's online, they're off making a pizza, you know, doing, you know, selling the screen. And it's not like I don't sit and like, look, is everybody paying attention? You kind of can only, you know, do what you do, but you can feel it, you know, so it's a different art form, no doubt, teaching online, teaching groups, working with groups. And, you know, in that pros and cons, I definitely feel like I'm still doing it. So I feel like there's still more pros because I just did a training, I don't know, last weekend before last. And, you know, there were people in there from Australia, New Zealand, Norway, you know, Sweden, you know, all over that. And some of those people would in the past for sure travel in, but not as many around, you know, Europe and different places. You know, it's not only more costly to travel, but a bigger time investment for people. So
yeah,
you know,
it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I work in a clinic, and what I've found is that you kind of have maybe like 66.6 reoccurring percent of people that, you know, are so grateful to be back in person.
Yeah.
You kind of have the, you know, the last third that have really enjoyed the telehealth program and like the fact that they can be a little bit more, they feel safer perhaps in their own environments. And yeah,
I would say it's probably 50-50, honestly, because if you even just deal with, say, a city like LA, I mean, forever, you know, people that were on the West Side that had an afternoon session booked or early morning, you know, they routinely would be, can we just move it online, you know, or can we do a phone session? Just because if, you know, maybe an hour there, it's spending an hour with the you know, and then an hour and a half back, they're like, you know, okay, I'll just do it on the phone or online, you know? So that's a reality, and you're absolutely right. The really shy, quiet people, it's for them more safe, you know, more safe environmentally for them, you know, and the exposure to be in a group, just, you know, they're going to be even quieter in a group. So,
yeah.
But I make it a point in every group, you know, class that, and even that's an art form to go around and have, I mean, oftentimes I'll start off just, hey, let's just say your name and where you're located, and we'll go, you know, and that can take, if there's 30 people, that can take, you know, 15 minutes. Or then if I have them answer a question and say, okay, just ideally one sentence, you know, that'll take a little extra. If you leave it open-ended and it's kind of like, let's process this with a group of 30 people, it could take an hour, you know. So you have to really set very specific kind of clear boundaries of what the parameters are. And it's, I find it's really important to, you know, sometimes even twice a day, I will go all the way around the group. But you have to be able to manage people in that sort of way, in a good way, humorously, light, not too grippingly.
Yes, yes.
So, but, you know, and I haven't really done train or, you know, classes with other teachers or people because I'm spending enough time online. But when I, you know, have a break, I'm like, get me away from the computer.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll squeeze in a couple of interviews here and there. But, you know, and I don't know what everybody else is doing. I'm just kind of sharing what I've learned. And of course, I have a few people teaching for me, and they'll set in, you know, on what, when I'm teaching, so that they can kind of learn some of the rhythms and various things.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I think those, when you're working in group settings, to have those important boundaries, I think someone like myself who's, you know, off the charts in extroversion, you know, to be like, oh, so let me tell you about the hour I was born. It was an autumn morning, and, you know, I wouldn't know where to stop. So, but I have that filter. That's why I have a podcast.
Yeah.
But it makes sense. I think, you know, give it a sentence here and there. And I think it's good for people because when you kind of make it equitable in those moments, you give someone like me to say, well, I need to think more carefully about the words I use to get my point across. And then you have shyer, perhaps more introverted people to say, well, this is a chance for me to use my voice because maybe I was from a setting or a background where that was suppressed or whatever.
Yeah, no, it's hugely important. And for sure, you know, in more in-person settings, there will be, for, you know, in every group, a few people that would be more extroverted and would have, you know, the capacity to take up a lot of time and space. And that is exactly my core intention, is that there's equitable time, you know, and some people are going to get more time just because they're willing to stay present and always want to be answering questions. So then at a certain point, I will move on past them to ask the quiet person who's sitting there like this, hey, what about you? You know, so I think you know, like anything, however you can keep the group engaged, it's for the benefit of the group always.
Definitely. So let's talk about your work then, David. What were you noticing any patterns of pain points coming up in response to the pandemic? And were there specific issues that were constantly coming up when people were reaching out to you for healing?
Let's see. When you say pain points, you just mean
I know one thing that I was noticing was people were feeling a real sense of kind of isolation and loneliness. But then on the other side, again, this kind of, we've got a pattern here in our own podcast here, speaking about extroversion, introversion. People who were more introverted were loving it because this was a time for them to shine.
Oh my God. And you know, the adaptation, and it's like suddenly every place delivered, and even, you know, of course, even to a fault, if we look at, again, it's positive and negative with the Amazons, but you can register or, you know, buy something and it can be delivered the same day, or same way with groceries, and fortunately, I think a lot of the companies have at least kept that part of it fair and not maybe gouged so much. So then if you look at the time to go do, you know, shop or do something, and you're paying $8 or $10 for a delivery fee, you're kind of like, well, it's a better use of my time, you know, to be doing something else, even if it's, you know, meditating or relaxing. So, I mean, the world for sure has changed. I would say, you know, patterns, and no doubt, you know, I mean, I put a meditation out called I'm Safe about, I don't know, 6 months ago to counterbalance all the programming and, you know, tension and anxiety that was, you know, that everybody's been breathing in and watching too much news and whatever, you know, the dangers and the endless things of maybe just the evolution on our planet of what could feel like it's a less safe, more volatile, you know, human experience. And so I wanted to put, it felt strongly because I'd been having to, you know, work with people about, you know, changing some of that subconscious programming and be able to have them say, I'm safe. It's safe to be in my body. I can release. And that's what we would do with the breath, raise their vibration and clear, you know, some of the energy that was just stuck, you know, in the subconscious and even conscious mind and nervous system and the whole body. So that's been, it's really important to help people detox and release, you know.
It's such a phenomenal tool, you know, and I still don't quite understand what's going on, you know, but I'm an avid listener to your 7 and 13 minute meditations. I could actually repeat back the 7 minute meditation to you because I've heard it that much, but it's just, for me, it's just so wonderful. It's 7 minutes. It's 5 minutes of breathing. You have the 2 minute Shavasana at the end of it. And then I might do another meditation after that. But if it's the fastest way I've found to just, it changes my physiology completely. You know, that's I don't really understand what, you know, you talk about in that meditation, how, you know, that oxygen surplus kind of neutralizes that part of the brain that is constantly going. Perhaps you could speak a little bit more about what's actually going on in the brain and body.
Well, now I'm not a scientist, but certainly even with my friends that are people who study with me, that are anesthesiologists and understand all the oxygen and carbon dioxide and all the physiological things that go on with the brain. But the way that it resonates with me is as, even if we're exercising or if we're just taking a good fast walk and creating more blood flow, more breath, more intake of breath into the lungs, that quickly makes its way into the bloodstream, the oxygen, and pretty much the quickest place it travels to, it seems, is the brain. As the hypothalamus gland, crown chakra, gets activated with that added energy, oxygen, it starts to release endorphins, interferon, neuropeptides. Again, I'm sure there's plenty of scientists and whatever, brain surgeons, people that, but this is the way I've always understood it. And, you know, and again, like, more like exercise a bit in the beginning as we're creating that increase in oxygen. And literally, it's pretty much almost to a person about that 5 minute mark, that shift. Like, so people, you know, a common phenomenon that humans are just living by is a mental, you know, a mental process, a mental journey with life, like thinking. And it's almost like driven, I always say, like Webster's dictionary, or, you know, the definition our brain puts on everything. And it's leading us. And that's kind of maybe what I've always said is some of the limitation to talk therapy.
Yep.
Because the brain knows the story. It's told it 1,000 times. It knows all the whatever. But what the key I find in the healing is to get in front of the brain with our emotions and our experience. So if we can slow the brain down, get the feelings to move forward a bit, get the, you know, get the brain just to relax, then all this backed up, for lack of a better description, almost like constipated stuff that's pushed down comes up. And, you know, not only as the hypothalamus gland gets activated, but then the pineal and the thyroid and the thymus and all the other chakras, Douglas glands, they, if we look at the hypothalamus mainly maybe being like the mainframe computer and all these other little, you know, connected devices, it, you know, it, this amazing things happens when suddenly a person's experience starts being more interesting than their thoughts.
Yes.
And it's like when the thoughts, then when you let go of the thoughts, then you start having, you know, for lack of a better cliche, you know, a spiritual experience with yourself. Mm. So whatever the emotional pain or stuff from the past that a person may be holding, or some fear, anxiety that's out in front, when the brain just kind of relaxes, those things kind of merge together and then release. And I look at it as we're breathing, you know, and the energy is rising, you know, through the nervous system and the body. That also is at that moment, about that 5 minute mark, where people start to feel tingly, where, you know, it's this perfect convergence where suddenly they start to feel their body in a different way. And then that's when the thoughts just aren't as controllingly interesting. And then again, if there's emotions that are stuck, they'll oftentimes just clear, start moving. Person will start to feel energy stronger. If they are visual, they may start to see something. I was working with somebody today. I started seeing, as soon as she started vibrating, she started seeing almost like a diamond shape, the figure moving in her, the energy of her body. And I mean, right at that time, I definitely had some intuition that there was something in her lineage that she was working out, you know, when she was getting, she was bringing consciousness to. So
yes,
yeah, it's, I mean, nothing scientifically is going to be able to measure what the spiritual experience is. There's no kind of boxing it up and making it
definitely
it into something that's so consistently understood because it is creatively unique to each person. And that's the magic in it. And that's also the magic in the, what keeps it fascinating and interesting to me. After working with thousands of people, it's always unique, you know. Yes. And I use the word spirit, but again, we could say God, the universe, Shakti, vibrate, you know, but it's endless what we can call it. I'm not attached and don't feel ownership of the name is important, that it, you know, any description somebody wants to use is fine with me.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's so true. I mean, science is our, I mean, the irony of what I'm about to say is I'm actually doing a psychological science degree, but it's one method that we have. You know, before science, yeah, alchemy was the big thing, and, you know, right, we can predate it all with the way back to myths, which I feel still believe hold a lot of reverence. But who knows what the next science is going to be, and if it's going to incorporate some of this stuff that's beyond our comprehension at the moment. You know, it's, I think open-mindedness is so important for that.
Well, so I mentioned the meditation I'm saying, for the one that we just released, is called Breathwork Psychedelics, just because this thing, I mean, it's been present. I've been aware of it for a long time, people using psychedelics, and it's even become very mainstream with Western medicine. Maybe not, I mean, some to do with mushrooms, I guess, but also ketamine. And honestly, you know, I'm okay. I haven't done everything. I've done ketamine, but I certainly tried mushrooms and ayahuasca before and had great experiences, and don't really have any judgment of it from my perspective. It's just I've had to help a lot of people get through.
Yes.
Like they would get caught in what I call like the negative loop, and they, yeah, in that enhanced state, they couldn't get out, and they didn't have maybe the support in a group or whatever to have that assistance. Or people, you know, travel down to the jungle and, you know, maybe didn't, yeah, have a lot of good support with through their experience. But you know, I think by and large, probably most people have good experiences, but I've had to help enough people through maybe not so good ones. And then I have plenty of people who are so sensitive, and they ask me, I'm like, I don't think you need it. Let's just use the breath, you know, because it, with the breath, you're taking each breath and you can augment even your experience by slowing the breath down, stopping the breath. Whereas if you drink a good amount of something, and you're in it, you have this leap, but you may, I find a lot of people aren't empowered from a whole picture, you know, and there's plenty of people who have had life-changing, wonderful experiences using psychedelics, but I find there is some limitation. You know, in human nature is we want to get somewhere the fastest way possible, and shortcuts are always pretty seductive to many. But I find in that leap and that gap that people ultimately aren't as empowered in the growth process, that where I believe something like breath work, you know, is more empowering, is they're actually doing the work, not a substance or a drug, but the person, you know, receiving healing is actually doing the work, the bulk of the work themselves.
So. Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I think, you know, there's that old adage about, how wonderful it would be to swim to this beautiful island, you know, and it's so beautiful to swim there because it's fulfilling and you get a good workout. And then someone comes along and says, well, yeah, but the ferry's only $5. But it's like, so you do get there, but so much of life is the story that you can tell yourself and other people based upon the ups and downs, the adventure that I think comes. And I've always thought about breath work as being, you know, like you're wading out into a very wide ocean, but breath work always gives you a very strong rope tethered to a tree. So that if you go too far, you can just pull yourself back in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I have to, in the trainings, have to, because people in the early parts, they may be like, well, I had a really strong experience. Or people will say, well, what do you do if people get into, you know, a lot of emotional release or their trauma, you know? And I'm like, that's why we're doing it, you know? Yes. That's what we've been doing since the beginning, you know? And recently there's been a number of somatic leaders, authors, teachers coming to me in the last year, and they're like, hey, what we do helps a lot of people, you know, but it doesn't work for us. And so they're asking me to help them go deeper into their body to clear some very specific things that they can't seem to access. So, you know, we all ultimately, most of us will need, we can't do it all usually by ourselves, that we, you know, need a little help and support, you know? So, but yeah, I mean, to me, it's fast, but it can be controlled and calibrated, and you can always shift it. And if a person feels like, if they're even breathing to listening to a recording, then they, and I find people self-regulate, you know, like, oh, it's really strong. I went through a lot. I was crying so much. I stopped breathing, you know, I mean, you know, slowed down the breathing. And they'll be like, is that okay? I go, yeah, it's totally fine. You know, like cleansing, clearing, releasing, it's about the journey way more than the destination, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things I love about the 7-minute recording, I wasn't intending to just market this 7-minute, but I really enjoyed it. I got a lot from it. At the very end of that meditation, you say, perhaps if you've found more time now, you can go on and do the 13-minute one.
Right.
I love that because, you know, I find myself, when I'm most allured to doing the 7-minute one, it's often when I'm in a kind of hyper aroused state, you know, and I'm trying to like figure my way out of things through thinking, you know, just that never ending paradox. It never works. And when I get into the body, it's just a 5-minute pause in the narrative I'm telling myself. And I've realized even just enough to realize that it is a narrative that I'm telling myself. And you're so right. It does create time. You know, and it's a wonderful example of, I think, what you were talking about before, of how we're so, the way we lead and maneuver ourselves through the world is with this mental phenomenon. You know, it's enough for us to go, oh, yeah, I was doing that thing again, you know?
Right. Well, so I say to people all the time, the ones who are getting sick and like they're stressed beyond, I'm like, you're chasing time. If you're chasing time, there's never going to be enough time, and it's going to cost you. Like your adrenals are going to burn out. You're just going to be stressed because you're going to always have that tension and not even be breathing. There's not enough time. I'm running late. I can't get it done. You know, that sense of overwhelm. And usually I'll tell you, like usually it's not about, because the overwhelming feeling is I can't deal with all of these things, but it's usually one thing that you're putting off and not confronting. And I'll be like, what's the one thing you're putting off? And they'll be like, what do you mean? Well, like, okay, I got to have this conversation with my whoever. And I've been putting, it's like, have that conversation. And every time it's like, oh, that was it. Now I'm relaxed. And so, and you know, that's a self-study. I've learned that process. If I have anxiety or something's affecting my sleep, or I'm waking up thinking about it, then I don't put it off. I'm like, you know, I don't care, deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
And then time slows down. And that, you know, the other thing with breath work that I think is really important beyond the 7 minutes. So 7 minutes is the minimal.
That's
the day you run to the gym and do a couple of chin-ups and push-ups and run out. But a little bit, you know, longer, some of the other recordings, you know, when people get to that place where they're really not thinking, vibrating, their spirit's moving through them, their time is slowed down, it slows down in such a way. And this is something that I'm just writing about. And I think it's the really magical thing is when you get in that place when time almost stands still, then you can, I'm tracking this with people as you can, this is where you can jump through lifetimes. This is where you can go backwards to lineage or forwards. You know, it's not there every session, but when you get into that magic zone and the spirit is really, you're in that full on connection to your spirit. And, you know, if you have awarenesses about some unresolved stuff in past lifetimes or something within the lineage, you can easily just go back there. And in one of the classes I teach, the level two, we actually go forward in time, usually 2 or 3, 4 years. And then I have to set it up right. But I found it's a really magical thing when you can help people, you know, relax and move forward to take a look at their life where there's a lot of love and exchange and consciousness in the practice of the work we're teaching. And as they move that forward, you know, and being able to see their life. And I've had hundreds of people say, oh my God, here's the paper I wrote in the class and here's what I read, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road. And they're like, everything's come true.
Yeah.
And so many people. And I think the magic in that is the way it's witnessed, the way people lean into it, their spirit comes in, but then having it witnessed by a group, you know, really helps add some energy to it. So, you know, it's, there's a lot of manifestation models out there. This isn't really so, I mean, it is some part of a manifestation, I guess we could say, but really it's more of, you know, taking what we're working on right now and utilizing it and then asking your spirit just to show you, you know, like a nice, easy waking up morning, what your life smell like, feel like, taste like, and that some of the real depth of power in it is using the senses. Smell, you know, an ocean breeze or coffee, you know, in the background. I hear, feel a little baby or, you know, heartbeat beside me, and, you know, these things that people, you know, are wanting, but to take it beyond wants into the senses actually experiencing it creates some pretty nice magic, I guess we could call it.
Well, it becomes more of a visceral, like real thing, isn't it? Like you can really start to feel, you know, like a perfect day or a vision, you know, that's just so wonderful. And I think, you know, one of the powers of breath work is that to just detach yourself from the story that's guiding your life for long enough. And obviously, as you said, probably requires a bit more than 5 to 7 minutes. But when you really break free from this idea of who you feel that you've needed to be for so long, you fall into this place that I feel like is simultaneously exciting and terrifying, because it's, well, now you're a no one, so you could be anything. And the fear is, well, now I'm, who the hell am I? But it's also, who do you want to be? And that's why I think the visualization can come in so handy, because it's like, well, I don't have to be this people pleaser, overly agreeable, I don't know, A, B, and C, depending on my upbringing or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, it's claiming, you know, it's claiming. So I set it up in a way of like, because really with the healing book, you know, a lot of it's about self-love. And to me, that's the starting point. And even with deep healing with people, getting them to understand through the use of the breath, working with their energy, and then, you know, teaching people when they start to really feel the presence of their spirit as vibration, then to start to imprint, this is self-love. You've been doing the breathing for 7 minutes, 14 minutes. You've been doing the work. Now you can claim that, you know, this is a representation of me loving myself. The whole game changes when a human being realizes that they can love themselves and that the whole external world, even our intimate relationships, change dramatically when we're in a place of self-love, because then we're not needy. And then that person out there is not dictating, you know, our own experience, that they're actually freed up to be who they are, you know, and whatever we share is some, you know, agreed upon, almost like the icing on the cake, you know. There's a lot to it, you know. There's so much. There's probably nothing new in the spiritual world really being created. It's more of regurgitated in, you know, a language and an understanding of what people can hear right now. You know,
that's a really good point, I think. Actually, that would be a great conversation to have. Do you feel that? I mean, I did a little bit before. Tell me about the science, David. What do you, when new people are coming to you and asking about this modality, is there a language that you feel has worked better or based upon our age at the moment?
I mean, probably the lucky thing, and as my wife puts me in my place, you should be successful. You've been doing it forever. People, you know, hopefully they would know about you. I'm like, you're right.
Ma'am.
The good thing is, if you've been doing something a while, and I mean, the key is there's no secret. The key is, if, you know, there's energy and what I call spirit moving around the work you're doing, word of mouth is going to, you don't have to promote, you don't have to sell. Yeah. It's that this person's going to tell their 5 family members and people they love and want to help. They're going to, and it's just going to keep spreading that way. And so for me, you know, answering your question, usually I just ask the person, you know, is there something I can help you with? Is there something specific you want to focus on today? And usually it's like, they'll be like, oh yeah, how long do we have, you know, or can I bring out my list? You know, so they've already formulated something in their mind based on however they've found me, which rarely is it anything to do with something posted on social media or whatever, because it's always been word of mouth. And, you know, and so the sales, all that's already handled because of people sharing their own experience. So I'm going to just ease right into it with, what can I help you with? Is there anything, you know, in particular that we need to focus on? And then they're going to share with me and tell me what they believe I need to know. Mm. And they're telling me what I believe I need to know, even before they got here. My intuition, usually I say they can only show up about 5 minutes ahead of time energetically, but I'm going to have intuition starting to, you know, percolate as soon as they come in the door. A funny thing is, people, they're talking about, you know, what do you do when people get emotional? I'm like, half the time, even the men, when they knock, come in the door, they're like starting to tear up or something. What's going on? So, you know, the emotions start to move, you know, people really just want to be seen and heard and felt without judgment. And with that acceptance, generally, again, what people are carrying just starts to release. And then, you know, after we talk for 15, 20 minutes, then I'm going to, you know, move them. And it's the same process online. Then be like, shift into, okay, I think we're ready to do the breath, the meditation, which they already know about. And many people have already been practicing on a lot of the recordings on Spotify. So, you know, I don't really have to show many people how to do the breath, but I still go ahead just to make sure they kind of have the rhythm down. And again, whether it's in, if it's in person, maybe I can do, if need to be, a little bit of interaction with the body. You know, I make some essential oils for the chakras, blends of oils. So that would be the thing that might be a little different than online, even sure. though people that have worked with me a lot of times already have the oils and they will have applied them and kind of set their space up. So really people's, their own intention for healing kind of sets the tone and I work into that, you know, doing my best to help them feel safe, seen, heard, felt, and then I trust the universe to hold the agenda for the person's healing, you know, or release or shift or opening. And pretty much, you know, something always happens, you know.
Yeah. It's amazing when people you know, even just make the financial commitment, you know, it doesn't have to be financial, but in this day it usually is, just to say, yes, I'm going to go and do a session or something. And as you said, you know, they open the door and straight away they're in a container of being held. So it just, I mean, I remember a fellow, he's got nothing to do with how I work at all. I wish I could take some credit, but I cannot take any of this credit. And he came into the clinic and I said, hey, mate, so how can I help, or something like that? And he just bawled his eyes out. But it just speaks to what you were saying of, you know, you finally step up. And I've noticed it with my own work in the past, where I've, you know, taken on a practice or spoken to a counselor or whatever, and I immediately feel like I can let go of some armor or defense mechanisms, or even when you're getting a haircut, you know, you're sitting in the chair and someone's doing something for you. You're like, oh, this feels pretty nice. I can kick back a little bit, you know, not that I need a haircut right now.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you get yours is probably, you get to handle that yourself, I guess.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and if you think about it, you know, with your parents or their parents, you know, the views of getting help, seeking out healing or even counseling, you know, has changed so much since, you know, the prior generations. And you know, it's the younger people. I mean, I routinely am working with sometimes 12-year-olds, 14-year-olds who are, you know, going through stuff that won't be. And then the bulk of my work is one or two sessions, and then people go, you know, they have their therapist, they have other, their astrologer, whatever they, you know, but, and then they just come in when we need to deal with something, whether that's 6 months later, a year later, 5 years later. I mean, I saw somebody recently I hadn't seen in like 20 years.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's so cool. What was that like?
I remembered, I mean, I have most of the time a pretty good memory. So I remembered, and they were like totally freaked out. What do you mean? You remember that?
What? Yeah.
But, you know, and I saw a guy also recently that I'd seen like 12 years ago who had cancer, and he got back in touch with me and said, and I only saw him one session, and he, anyway, he got back in touch with me and said, hey, I'm ready to, I don't know, do you remember me? I'm still alive. And and he's like, now I'm coming in to work on relationship. That, you know, we healed the cancer. I did in the breathing, this, what I call the entity release, which is also a recording on Spotify. We did that with him. He had testicular cancer. And when we got into it, literally the experience and thing that happened to him when he was younger just came out, and he's like, he felt it, and literally think he was about midway through his chemo when he came to see me. He's like, it changed things so dramatically, which is kind of unheard of they even stopped his chemo. They didn't go the full six. I think they stopped it at five cycles instead of six. And he's like, I'm fine, you know. And he's like, I felt, you know, whatever that thought form energy was, totally left my body. And he's like, I've been the same ever since. But he's like, it took me a while to trust that I was ready for a relationship. And yeah. I got into one, but now I need help how to navigate it. So, you know, those are
amazing.
Those are stories that are heartwarming to me because, it, you know, his journey of life, he's living, you know, and he's chewing it up pretty good. And he's like, hey, that was a blip that, you know, happened. And I'm grateful every day I got through that. And, you know, it's not like that I'm claiming that I had anything to do with his healing. I just got to be part of it, you know.
I'll claim that for you.
What was fun for me, his humor and how he came back about this. I got myself into this thing now with relationship, and I really need like some guidance about some choices here, you know. So it was a lot of honest vulnerability in it. And he, you know, I mean, that's the amazing thing about doing healing work like this. You know, I may only see a person two or three times ever, but still have some impact, you know, on their life, you know. So,
I mean, it's just, you know, there's only so much that talk therapy can do before, you know, and that's something that someone that does it. I just feel like they work so well together. I often say this to Siobhan, like when there's a real major emotional shift that needs to happen, we could talk to someone till the cows come home, but it's not going to do anything. But then when something comes up and people need help narrativizing and integrating it, that's when I find talk therapy can really be beneficial.
Yeah. You know, it's really important, you know, and I like it when people have a team, they have a really great therapist and they have that dynamic where they can bounce everything off them. And there's quite a lot of therapists, psychiatrists, psychologists that send me, you know, a lot of their clients to say, you got to go to him for this, you know, help, got to get this, you know, opened up and moving. And, you know, but I'm not, and I don't, you know, for me, I'm fine. They do the, you know, talk therapy and we talk and we'll, you know, I'll mirror things or whatever, but I don't really get into some heavy historical, you know, psychoanalysis or anything because I know they got that covered. And honestly, you know, people know that, but then they still need help in that, you know, maybe even putting context of what happened in the healing session to the application moving forward with the relationships or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody, I think, is important in the process. I like it when people say, I've done 20 years of therapy. I'm like, great. That shows a good commitment. Now we'll just see if there's some other layers, or with a lot of people, it's just that residue. And with the deepest traumas and sexual abuse, you know, stuff, it's like they may have every understanding about what happened, but they can't clear the almost like the taproot or just some of that residue and that's where we have to take the spirit and use that to cleanse things on that deepest level, you know, and a lot of times on that deepest emotional thread too.
It's so true. And, you know, I mean, it's so important to be selfish with your personal development. And, you know, some people just doing somatic stuff is enough, and that's who they are. And they can't be fuck talking. It's not, they don't want to do it, you know, and cause they don't want, it's not who they are, you know, and that's amazing. Other people spending an hour a day knitting is enough. I don't know, gardening, whatever, you know?
Right. To me, a content happy person, you know, who's made peace or doesn't keep, you know, revisiting or isn't troubled by something, I'm like, don't mess with, you know, don't mess with what's good and what's working. I mean, I don't, and I say to friends, it's like, okay, it's enough processing. You guys, you know, some couples, I'm like, you guys live, go have some fun, you know, can't you keep processing and picking it apart, that even can get boring, you know? Yeah. So it's like, it's a combination when we need to work on stuff, do the work, get in there, you know, and honestly, you know, I'm a biggest believer that creative expression, pushing people creatively,
yeah,
you know, all else fails, just go to gratitude and
yes,
use that as a practice. And, but I know I have a big passion for nudging and encouraging artists and creative people, that otherwise I wouldn't have still be, you know, in Los Angeles working with a lot of entertainment people. It's fascinating for me. I like, you know, I'm always passionate about, you know, artists that have a side that's so been so traumatized, but they've learned to live in this almost fantasy creative place that, you know, oftentimes we have to help them in that bridging of that, you know, enough, keeping enough energy flowing between the two that they stay grounded. But I get to see, you know, some of the most creative people and understand and, you know, and a lot of times even keep them going straight down the path to say, just get back to finishing your album or finish your movie script or just stay on that. And they're like, what do you mean? I've got this divorce. I'm like, okay, divorce, it'll, if you go completely sideways with that, you're, and you stay not connected to your creative expression, you'll probably go deeper into the rut. So yes, getting them back creating a lot of times is all the fix that highly creative people need. You know, that's their therapy. That's their, you know, healing. So if they're not, it's like the football team, you know, or over there, I guess, you know, but, you know, in America, the American football,
yes,
like,
yes, it's,
you know, the colleges, they would have usually in the season, one weekend, they didn't play a game. As half the team would be getting rested, throwing the furniture out of the dorm room windows because they weren't using that energy up. It was using them, you know, even though they would still practice, they had too much, you know, they weren't using it. So with highly creative people, they got to be creating, you know, using it. Otherwise, it turns on them, you know.
Yes. That it's that's kind of like my favorite person to work with. I love people that are just, they see the world in ways that we'll never be able to see, you know, and they live on the border of the known and the unknown. And, you know, that is their vessel. Their creative expression is the, it's because they fall through the cracks of what society can offer, you know, being a lawyer or a doctor isn't enough. And they can turn our world into rejuvenate it with their ideas. But do you find that with those sorts of people being so open, that the discipline and the pursuit of finishing their creative thing is the hard part? Or, I mean, yeah.
Well, there's plenty that, you know, lack of confidence and, you know, the ones who maybe the dark or some addictions that they, you know, I mean, one guy I can think of had huge, became huge, but had heavy issues with his mom, doubted his talent so much that he would just like torture himself, but was a super talented writer. Mm. And, you know, like he remembers and he would describe when his first like inspiration came through. And, you know, he sold a movie script for $750,000 when he was fresh out of college, you know. Wow. And then, you know, a lot of success writing movie scripts, and but was always torturing because he doubted his talent. Mm-hmm. And I was always be like, hey, what would happen, you know, if you didn't persecute yourself so much and grew to trust it? And but the fear was that his talent was his suffering. And I was like, maybe, I don't know if that's accurate. Yes. You know, eventually you're going to probably, well, torture yourself to death, you know, in a way, you know, smoking cigarettes, drinking gallons of coffee, doubting, and then vomiting it out. And still there would be some magic there. And so we worked pretty hard. It was an amazing manifester if he just got out of his own way, you know, so that extreme talent also can come with a lot of extremes, you know, and almost like walking a tightrope of sanity, you know, but lot of that gift is in that place that's not grounded in normal reality, you know. Yeah. So that's, you know, again, and those super talented people, it is fascinating. I like, you know, seeing their whole life and what, you know, understanding it just in a few minutes. You can see it, you can hear it. For the artists, the musicians, when I'm working with them, I'll hear their soundtrack. If they're a writer, I'll kind of be led into the passion about their storytelling. Mm. If they're a filmmaker or, you know, photographer, for them, I mean, literally my third eye will work, you know, be different in the session because I'll see more. So, you know, that's some of the byproduct of, you know, being able to work with people, but also being able to see it from their perspective too.
Yes. Yeah, and you bring up such a good point about the I mean, there's this cliche idea of the tortured artist, you know. Right. And I think maybe a lot of people come into artistry and creativity to alchemize that pain, but then after a while that it becomes very existential for them because they start wondering who they'd be without their pain. And I think beyond that, maybe if you're speaking to this, but it's about, well, can't you just be creative without needing this pain to define you?
Right. Yeah. No, I was talking with a singer actually today, and she's not really doing her music, but I could tell when she was breathing, there was so much more that wanted to be coming out. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it, and I was like, you know, the magic for many performers. A lot of people have stage fright or doubt, but and they start to sing, and then that transmutation, that what feels like anxiety or terror turns into their spirit coming through because they do it, because they choose to do it, you know, versus, you know, not doing it. So, you know, I've known many performers, so I've had to work with many that the day before they start a movie or recording their album, they lose their voice, you know?
Yeah, yeah, wow.
And I'm like, it's okay. Your voice is going to come back. You just got to trust this is a project you're meant to do. And, you know, there's something in there. And then as far as you want to go with some people, sometimes there is certainly for maybe a bit more on the female side, you know, past lifetime trauma, when they were fully expressed around the throat, you know, you know, using the throat, you know. So so have had to help certainly quite a lot of female writers in Hollywood that it was safe for them to actually speak up in meetings and be heard in a meeting full of men, you know.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So, wow. Well, David, my friend, I could talk to you for hours. I love it. I want to be conscious of your time, and I appreciate it as always. In terms of what's on the horizon for you, just quickly, you mentioned that you you put out a is it a bunch of meditation recordings for is it psychedelic integration or what is it specifically?
So actually, a lot of times during the end of the year holidays, I had some friends who do music, and they'll each year bug me enough to where so let's record. So last Christmas holidays, we recorded four meditations. So we've released two of them. The I'm Safe, I think, came out in March, and then Breathwork Psychedelics, which is a bit of a play on, even the cover of the psychedelic maybe movement in the 60s or 70s.
Cool.
In my own tongue-in-cheek way. But really the passion is about that the breath can take you into just as deep of an experience.
Definitely.
And then probably in the fall we have one because I help so many people around pregnancy. So it's going to be pregnancy and fertility, a recording that also will have application with people around their creativity. And then I forgot the fourth one, I believe it's like deeper clearing of abuse energies out of the physical body.
Wow, that's awesome. Awesome. Cool. Yeah. Well, I'd love to, I'll have to listen to those. And if I've learned anything from today, I'll probably have to do a little bit more than the 5 minute one. That's good.
Yeah. Well, to get to the breathwork, to the psychedelic place, there's a few things I'm having people do a little bit more passionately with the breath and bringing the breath up through the heart in a slightly different way that helps also open the upper chakras. So
it's important. I'm hearing what you're saying.
Yes.
So you work in LA at the moment for people who want to find you. Are you doing stuff still down in New Mexico?
New Mexico. I do usually the trainings there. We're looking at maybe gearing back up with retreats. It's like, just when you think things are going to get easier, some new thing. But, so I mean, knock on wood, in any of the group work we've done, we haven't had any complications with COVID or anybody getting anything before or during or after, let's put it that way. But usually we'll just at least nowadays be at the place that we're bringing a group of people together that, the day before they just do a rapid test and, again, knock on wood, but we've been very fortunate. Groups are smaller. We're doing everything in a conscious way with even filtering and keeping the place, filtering the air and keeping the place extra clean. And, I like to think that one day soon we'll get over the hump of or get the herd immunity so good that, we're on to whatever else is coming down the pike. But, but I'm hoping to, at least next year get back to retreats too, or like the application of what people learn in the trainings and retreats are like a little bit more of a community based application of the healing work, that has themes, to them. So.
Oh, that's awesome. Great. Well, if people that want to stay following that, is there a place that people can find you?
Yeah, just on my website. I don't, I tell people, they're like, I signed up for your newsletter. And I'm like, sorry, I haven't been doing newsletters for about the last 10 years. But
what newsletter?
What newsletter? I do have that on my website that they can sign up for it. I just don't. But usually just through the events page, they just look on there and see what's coming up. And, if they want to lean in. I'm not really doing much online except for the trainings. So yep. a little bit, you know, so.
Yep. Yeah, awesome. Well, mate, it's always such a pleasure to chat with you. And hopefully next time we hang out, there won't be another pandemic. Hopefully we'll be over the hump, as you said.
Hopefully we'll be, on over that horizon. So.
Definitely. Yeah, it'd be good. I mean, maybe even next time we can hang out, see if I can get myself over to the US and catch up for a coffee in person or something. It'd be cool.
That'd be awesome. My wife keeps nudging because she's like, we still have a honeymoon thing that was years ago that we put off and our daughter came in the mix, but that's going to Bali. And then she wanted to come back through Australia to Byron Bay.
Beautiful.
And there's some people down there and I have some friends down there too, but I'm sure once we get over to that part of the world, we'd probably stick around and visit a few places and areas. So.
Yeah. That whole area is beautiful. I got a lot of family that grew up in Byron Bay and even the Ballina area, Tweed Heads. It's just beautiful up there. It's freezing down here in Melbourne.
It's
very cold at the moment. So so that sounds pretty
winter
good.
Time, I guess. Yes.
Weather time. Yep.
Hot over here now. So well, good. But I look forward to our in person hug and meeting. Tell Siobhan I said hi.
Yes. There was a couple of barks before, but she's just come back with some of the dogs, I think. So
I heard.
I'm sure you did. I was going to put a disclaimer on the podcast at the beginning. A couple of dogs here at the moment, guys. So the barking was meant to be. But David, always such a pleasure, mate. Thank you so much. And we'll talk soon.
Okay, Tom. Thank you.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Bye. Oh, yes, there you go, guys. That was my chat with David Elliott. Hope you enjoyed it. And look, the idea, the topic, the theme of the day being creativity, if I could leave you with something, it would be to consider what creativity means to you. There's a wonderful book called Big Magic by Liz Gilbert, who wrote Eat, Pray, Love, which was then obviously turned into a major motion picture starring Julia Roberts. And Big Magic is all about creativity and how people who don't even consider themselves to be creative can become more creative. And the way she describes creativity, it's kind of like the these ideas that come to you and they just need to actualize themselves. So whether they come through one person or another person, you know, it starts with an idea, but then you, through a process of discipline, can actualize that depending on whatever it is. It might be a spark that becomes a wonderful item of clothing, you know, if you like to knit, or a book, or a dance, or a play, or a songwriter, or a song, or a interaction with a person that makes this wonderful flow state occur. Who knows what it is, but I personally believe that creativity can be a wonderful way to make you feel like there's reason for your life, you know, a profound sense of intrinsic meaning. And it's not the only way, but it can be, it's something that almost by definition is only yours. You know, I think that's so cool. So for today's episode, guys, take that away. Have a think about how you can become more creative if that is something that you want to do. Leave a comment. You know, these episodes are all on YouTube, so you can watch David Elliott and I talk and all my other podcast guests. Leave a comment on the YouTube section. Let me know what you're thinking. Send me an email. I would also recommend you subscribe to my newsletter as well. I love my newsletter. I try to punch out weekly therapeutic insights, tools, and tips, as well as some of the more interesting things that I'm thinking about as a clinician and as I go through my degree in psychological science. Just trying to bring tools that will help better your and optimize your mental health as well to help you thrive, because it's something that I'm really passionate about. So, yes, and until next week, guys, bye for now. Done. Wait, no, let's do that again. Until next week, guys, bye for now.